I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips because Rod and Karen are so hot.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I'm your host, Rod, joined as always by my co-host,
Karen.
We're live on a Wednesday, ready to wrap up our week.
We are.
Find us everywhere you find podcasts. Search the Black Guy Who Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so. Go ahead and do that. We appreciate those. Mm-hmm. We actually read them on the show as long as they're nice, and we let you know what we think about what you said. Mm-hmm. The official weapon of the show is
phone chair.
And unofficial sport
bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme.
You messed with me. I have to think about that.
I know. Every time.
Every single time. It's stressful.
And of course, if you have Sirius satellite radio, if you don't have it, but you want to go get it right now, if you have the app, if you want to use your free trial, Friday, Karen and I are hosting the Karen Hunter Show, which is from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's on Urban View, Sirius Satellite Radio's channel, I think it's going to be really fun. I think you guys are going to have a good time.
I'm excited.
We have some guests lined up. So far, we have Trey Crowder, the liberal redneck, who, if you guys have listened to Karen Hunter's show, he's been on. I've been on with him before. Mm-hmm. Really funny dude. We have JL Covan, who is coming on. And lastly, we have Shalewa Sharp. So, like,
yay.
I feel like the lineup is filling out, and we're going to have a good time. And I hope you guys can make it and be foolish
too.
With us.
I am so excited.
Yeah, so we got planning and music and all this stuff we got to do. So, appreciate y'all that support us and that will be over there checking us out. And, to everybody else, I'm encouraging you to go check us out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, as we always kind of start the show, I got to ask you if you have any banter for the show today.
Not really for today. Mm-mm.
Okay, no banter from Karen. No banter. Okay.
Cool. Oh, I'm about to say, and it's not really even banter. It's more of yes.
So okay, so you do have some banter.
Yes.
All right. Cool. No problem. As you said, that my program I used to play the music froze anyway. So it's probably for the best. Let me see if I can pull it back up. All right, banter time.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, Karen, banter away.
Okay. I was like, no, and then I thought about it. I was like, okay, yes, I do. And it's not really nothing big, but you said it don't matter. Me and Roger went out to lunch today, and I really enjoy going out to lunch at Roger. We don't get to do it as frequently because I work from home. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoyed going out and just sitting and just chilling at lunch with you. And something that I did today was I was looking at the menu, and they had this thing on the menu for like rolls, and one of the rolls was like it's called like chef's suggestion, the chef's choice, and the name of the roll is called Trust Me. That was the name of the roll. So I was like, okay, I was like, I want the Trust Me roll. And so he did it, and that chef was on it. That shit was motherfucking flames. It was absolutely delicious. I'm glad I trust the chef.
Well, they should have an option like that on every menu, I think, because a lot of times what they eat there and what they make there is really the best thing on the menu. I actually used to hate when I was a waiter and people would ask me what was good and then not get it. I'm like, just fucking order off the menu then. Leave me alone. Right. Leave me out of your decision. Because now I feel like I got rejected for no reason. I like that. That roll was good. And I had the seafood champion ramen and it was good as hell. Some good ass ramen. So yeah, it was, but it was nice to get out with you. I think, you know, one of the things about when you didn't work from home, we would at least meet up for lunch every, you know, once in a while, you know, a couple times a week at least, and at least spend that time, you know, eating together and talking, or even if we're just eating and scrolling or whatever the fuck, it don't matter. But we were, but now, you know, it's just me cooking here most of the time, and I really just didn't feel like cooking today. I went to the gym and did my last visit with the nutritionist for that plan, and all that stuff. So, and that all went well, you know. I've been doing all the stuff they told me to do. It's interesting because with the nutritionist, they do measurements that's not just of your weight, you know, because like I think so many people are obsessed with weight, you know. It's just like wait, lose weight, it's all whatever, starve yourself, whatever you got to do, lose weight. And that's not really the plan that I'm on. I mean, that obviously I'm going to lose weight and I'm losing weight. It's not that. But I mean, I'm not just like, okay, how do I get myself in the biggest calorie deficit? Right. And so that I'm starving myself and that my body, you know, just starts eating away. And it's more like, how do I gain muscle and eat the right stuff so that I have protein to feed my muscles and stuff. And so instead of just a weight thing, she like measures with a tape measure, like my measurements on my thigh, my arm, my body, my chest, my stomach, you know, all that stuff. And it's been interesting seeing those results, as because I can feel stuff that you can't really see on a scale or feel in your body necessarily. I can feel that my shirts fit a little bit different, you know, and, you know, so seeing that, getting that kind of confirmation really mattered to me, to be able to be like, okay, so the things I'm doing, they are working, you know, and especially when it's peaks and valleys and it's weight as in like you're gaining muscle but losing fat. So it's not really the same thing as just looking at scale. Like I know people that started diets or went on nutrition plans that essentially just, it, the goal was just to lose as much weight as quickly as possible, for as long as possible.
That was the purpose, yes.
And I, you know, that's their journey, and, and I'm not knocking it. But it's just sometimes it's like, oh man, am I, you know, is this really working? Because, you know, the scale is saying this and that, and then it's like cool to have that level of confirmation instead. So.
Yeah, and your weight fluctuate daily, you know, like. Retain water today, not retain it tomorrow. Yeah, like your weight is
that
all
too,
over the
but
place.
You know, it's that too for sure. But it's just also like the general trend is down. But it's not like just because it plateaus or something doesn't necessarily mean you're no longer doing the right stuff or whatever. Because I'm just focusing on doing whatever it is within the plan, you know, and still enjoying my life, you know. So I still eat good food and stuff. I cook all the time, but it's just a matter of like, you know, you don't want to get so caught up in the numbers. Why, you know, I talked to the nutritionist and she was like, you know, if you just want to only weigh yourself once a week, that's cool. Like, it's like, cause you'll go crazy doing it every day. Cause like you said, it's the ups and downs of water weight and all this other little stuff, muscle gain and whatnot. But it was a cool experience today doing all that. And, you know, I started powerlifting, learning those moves. And so, I had to learn like a new, like the barbell, what was it called? Barbell, not squat. I did those already. Deadlift, which is like you take the barbell from actually down here, lift it up, put it on the ground, lift it up, put it on the ground like 10 times or so at a certain amount of weight, then re-rack it. And I think after I learned this, I'll have learned all the major heavy lifts, you know, which is like bench press, squats. And so then I'll really get to have some fun and kind of design some of my own workouts and move into lifting like 4 times a week instead of 3. So I'm actually kind of excited about the progress that I'm making.
I'm I'm excited and I'm happy for you too. And I know you just kind of be just doing your own thing and just, you know, working out and exercising and things like that. And I just want you to know that I'm very proud and I'm very happy for you. And I'm glad that, you're in the right frame of mind. I'm glad that I know, because we talked about it before, and you were saying how, you know, before when, you know, you weren't perfect or you didn't do it right, how you would just kind of just be like, well, fuck it. So I'm glad that, you know, you kind of got over that mental hurdle.
Yeah, I was looking at it today. This will be my, because I write down my exercise in my notepad every week that I have a new routine. And I saw it'll be week 14 of me learning how to lift weights and working with a trainer and stuff, which is definitely the long, I mean, I've never really lifted weights before, been in the weight room consistently at all. And it's definitely, you know, like I remember that I told everybody that dude, that brother that saw me leaving the first day and told me like, man, it's not just good for your body, it's good for your mind. And I really do kind of understand what he's saying, just in measuring, like, one, what my body can do, what it's capable of, getting better, like, you know, the way I can do a plank now versus when I first started is just way different. But it's also, like, I noticed this too with a lot of my friends, you know, that it also keeps me from, like, thinking about what's stuff that I don't find that important. Like, trivial stuff in my brain is easy now for me to trivialize. Like, okay, this isn't really important. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I get that people are losing their minds and stuff over it, but it's not that big a deal. You know, somebody saying something crazy to you on social media is like, whatever. You know, because it just, I think it just kind of helps, because it's like, I got other shit to do. I got to leave. I got to go to this gym. I got to figure out, you know, how long I'm gonna be in there, what all I'm gonna do and all that stuff. And you know, lifting weight, I never thought I'd lift weights until I sweat. I always thought, like, it seemed like such a small thing, but I've lifted weights before. I've never broken a sweat lifting weights, because it's like, all right, I lifted them weights and they said do 3 sets of 10 or whatever, I'm done. But now, when, because I never knew how to do them right. So I would just be in there and like, I think I did that's what it say on the list. But then once I'm learning how to do it, you learn the form and all that type of stuff, and the way you take your rest in between and all that shit, I'll be in there sweating from just the weights. And I'm like, all right, that means I'm doing something right, getting a good workout. It's not no crazy shit. I'm not a lunkhead. I'm not in there sweating, pouring out my, you know, it's nothing like that.
Beating your chest.
But it's just something that I hadn't done. And I think this has really been helping me mentally a lot, in a way that I just didn't even really anticipate or think about. But I don't know. I feel like it's very helpful. So
I'm glad. And for me, and I know this might sound silly, but you know, in my mind, I think that you can do anything. I don't know why. Like, in my mind, I was like, Roderick is strong. I've always thought that. I never, you know, wondered anything different, never questioned that. And it's just really good to just see you kind of go to another level, you know, with the lifting of the weights. And
well, I know I'm naturally strong. I've always played basketball. I've never had no problem. Nobody's ever been able to, like, push me around the court unless they were, like, a professional athlete or some shit.
Right.
Like, I've always been able to hold my own. I've always been more athletic than people thought I was just from looking at me. But I've never really challenged myself. I've never pushed myself to this, you know. And I don't have a trainer who's trying to, like, break me or anything. So, you know, I'm doing stuff well within the safety parameters. Like, she's always like, be safe. Don't be in here. Like, these weights can fuck you up, you know. Like, when we did all the stuff today with the deadlift, she also had me doing an exercise where you get on all fours and, like, move your back around to keep your back loose, because you can mess your back up lifting a lot of weight like that. It's a lot of strain on your back. So, you know, it's just stuff like, you know, that I'm glad to be challenging myself, because it's just not something I had really even thought about too much. And so, yeah, and then just little stuff. I'm just, you know, I hadn't been thinking about what I eat most of my life. So,
yeah.
Feeling the difference between, like, oh, I ate a breakfast that had eggs and this in it this morning, and I feel it while I'm taking a walk, I can feel that extra burst of energy, like, yeah, versus I didn't have anything to eat, or I just had some applesauce or something. I could feel the difference in that, you know. And, you know, I used to really, really not be able to work out and play basketball if I had eaten anything. I would just feel real sluggish. But it also was probably what I was eating. You know, I wasn't really eating like whole foods and eating clean. I was more just like, fuck it, I'll grab Big Mac on the way to basketball court. And to me, if you live like that, you never think about it. So to me, I was like, that's what it feels like. That's why I don't eat before I play basketball.
Right.
But if I would have been eating, like, I don't know, half an apple or some shit, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, I need to eat before I play basketball. I need the energy.
Yeah, the food that kind of naturally gives you the energy. And something somebody said, and I really didn't even think about it. They said most of the food that's good for you doesn't have an odor to it. Like, you know, when you see an apple, most of the time, the apple itself, unless you kind of put your nose all in it, don't naturally, you know, have like an
odor. Well, I'm going to just stop you right there. I don't know what the fuck them people talking about. Okay, that sounds like some folksy, Mayberry-ass logic.
Not some
and I won't be listening to that. I won't be listening to that. I'm going to just go by the actual nutritional value and the ingredients.
I'm winging it.
Pungent food it can be delicious as well. It can also be good for you. So, you know, everything in kind of moderation and whatnot. I haven't cut out any food out of my diet or any of that stuff. So it's just more like I might eat it less, or I have a more ratio of like, all right, I'm eating this shit 80% of the time, and like 20% of the time I'm eating stuff I used to eat, which I think has been helpful because I haven't felt like I'm missing out or like I'm, you know, like, oh my God. Because I was talking to a friend and she told me this phrase I didn't know called food noise, which I definitely have. And I just never had heard the term before. But it's essentially when you think about food all the time a lot, and not just when you're hungry or something, but like I'm always thinking of like, okay, so how am I gonna cook this thing when I get home? Or okay, I need to have this in the house so that I can, you know, eat this later or whatever. Or you like, it's not even, I don't even know where it comes from. It's, you know, it's like a constant like, oh yeah, this food I'm having later, or this food I just ate, or this food, these ingredients that I, da da da, and I don't think I'm trying to like erase that. I'm just trying to use it positively. So now, my food noise, I've changed it to stuff like, okay, if I buy these chicken thighs and some lettuce and some jalapenos and some peppers and some onions, blah blah blah, that's a meal I can make later. And in my mind, I start thinking of how I'm gonna cook that meal later. And it helps with the food noise because it's more productive. It's not me going, should I get McDonald's? Should I go out Qdoba? Should I get Chipotle? Man, pizza is good. It's not that anymore. It's like, okay, so how am I gonna turn this salmon that I bought into a some type of like salad, you know, like, or how am I turn this salmon into a BLT, you know? And then I just start going, you know, I made some burgers last night, and it was just, I had been thinking, I bought those burgers a couple of days ago, and I've been thinking like, what's the best way to eat those burgers that's not too like crazy? And it was like, oh, I put it on a whole wheat English muffin with tomatoes and pickles, and
that thing was delicious.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about what you said. I never heard of food noise, but I am the type of person, and I think since we've kind of changed the way we eat, that food noise for me has kind of died down. Because I got to the point where, and I've always been like this, because I really enjoy eating. So I will be eating breakfast thinking about lunch, eating lunch thinking about dinner. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if that's a form of food noise.
I don't know the full definition. I didn't read a book, but yeah, I definitely do that too. You know, like I said, I would be thinking about food all the time. It's just crazy. You know, just driving home from something, be like, oh, I could get some chicken nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for me to, I don't want chicken nuggets. I'm not hungry for chicken nuggets.
Right. I've gotten better about that too. And I remember it sounded like a small victory, but I remember I was heading home and I was a little hungry, and the first time I just drove all the way home and didn't even think about stopping anywhere. Like, for me, that was an accomplishment because, you know, I'm driving, I get hungry. I'm like, well, I guess I'll pull over here and just grab something real quick.
The thing for me is with the way I'm eating now, I normally am full or feel full.
Right.
Like, I don't feel hungry or craving shit because I'm just, it's like, okay, so I ate grapes and some baked chips and some, and a little bit of rotisserie chicken, and that's like a snack at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, I'm not gonna be hungry. So when I'm going to the store at 5 o'clock, I'm actually not like, well, let me take a stop by Wendy's. It's like, no, right. I couldn't eat Wendy's if I wanted to. I'm full. So anyway, I didn't mean to make this a whole long thing. I know some people fuck with this, some people don't. You know, do each to your own. Anything else for banter?
Mm-mm.
All right, cool. So let's get into the show. Drapetomaniacs, we got nominated for a Webby Award.
Yay!
Yeah, I didn't even know we got nominated, man. That's huge.
Yay!
You know, Nolika had hit me on the WhatsApp to say, hey, we got nominated for a Webby. And I was like, cool, because I've been saying we should have been nominated for some stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
We definitely...
That podcast did a excellent. Great show.
Yeah. So I don't even, I assume this has been, they've already done it or whatever. So I don't think we won, but it's dope to know we got nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else we got here. Megan Thee Stallion denies allegations in former cameraman's lawsuit. Her lawyer claims it's an attempt to embarrass her. This is what I think is going to be happening. I don't really know how you treat this other than a court of law, because we are at a point now where we treat allegations as facts.
Right.
So if you're accused of something, we talk about it as if you did it. I try my best to not do that, but I'm human too. It's certain shit I'm like, that sound like they did it. Certain shit I'm like, I can see how that could be, you know, one or the other. And it's sometimes human. I'm like, this shit sound like a lie. I have no true barometer until you get to court. And then if mm-hmm. this goes to court, I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with us having the advent of social media and the new media that is a lot less rigorous or principled than traditional media.
And they're not journalists.
Right. Even if they are journalists, they're in a space that does not have journalistic standards.
Right.
So even if you're, say, Stephen A. Smith, you're not required to go on your show and treat it like you were when you were writing for the Philadelphia newspaper. It's the understanding between the audience and the creative is different. Now, you can do that if you would like to do that, if that's your personal bar. But a lot of times, like Shannon Sharp had Amanda Seals on this podcast today. There's no way you're going to watch all that, and all of that was fact checked. He may challenge some things, he may not challenge shit, but at the end of the day, that ain't really his job or his vibe or the product he's making.
Right.
Well, in that type of way, you know, from my understanding, Emilio Garcia, the accuser in this, had already done like an interview, you know, that went, I don't know if it went viral, but he'd already given like a podcast interview and stuff. So like, that stuff can be something that embarrasses you, puts you in the public light, you know, puts the onus on the person that's being accused, because everybody goes like, yeah. And if you have a good lawyer and stuff, the accused person normally ain't gonna say shit. Like, your lawyer might speak for you, and the rest of it is like, we'll see you in court. You're not.
Yep.
You're very rarely going to get the accused person doing something reckless, like going on Instagram Live and talking shit about the person or whatever, because it normally adds to the charges and shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, now you're harassing them. Mm-hmm. Oh, now you're intimidating them. So it is one of those things that, you know, I can only say we'll find out in court, hopefully.
Yes, sir. Hopefully. Like you say, hopefully. You never know.
Yeah. Let's see. I find this interesting as well. Robert Kraft and other billionaires suspend donations to Columbia University over anti-Semitism concerns. The reason I find this interesting is because we were just talking about this yesterday, I believe, yesterday, right? With the pro-Palestinian protests that are happening from the kids at school.
Yeah, the colleges, yes.
Yeah, they're camping out. The schools are now threatening them, like, hey, we're going to start arresting people, which, honestly, I can't think of worse optics, but I also don't work there and don't, like, it's not my job that, like, any of this stuff, but
right.
I just know that part of protest is getting the state
it's social disobedience. That's something, you know, for some part of it, that's part of the process.
Yes, and getting the state or whatever social disobedient, like whatever mechanism cracks down on you is part of it, right? It's mm-hmm. like if the civil rights movement happened and they don't sick the dogs and the water hoses and the police and the billy clubs on people crossing the bridge, it actually doesn't work.
Mm-mm.
You know, because then it doesn't look like you have a true opposition. There's nothing unfair happening.
Right.
And so then people across the world, when they see the video, they go, I guess they're upset about something. But when they see people getting arrested, rough, thrown to the ground, all that stuff, then it makes the whole world go, hey, what the fuck? You know, and I think when they go in there and start rounding people up, that's part of what's going to happen. But at any rate, what I find interesting about this story, of course, the vast majority of people that I know, the vast majority of people on my social media, it's very much like pro-Palestinian. It's, you know, in the bombing of the Gaza Strip. And, you know, and some of it's even more radical than that, you know.
Right. I've heard it all. Yeah, I've heard all types of stuff.
And so when you're surrounded, I feel like I'm in an echo chamber for the most part. So when you're surrounded by that sentiment, it's everything just seems easy. Like, hey, yeah, just fucking let the girl speak at the commencement, and if she wants to say a pro-Palestinian message, let her do it. What's the problem? Freedom of speech, right? But I never have to deal with this side of it. I didn't even think about this side of it, to be honest. These billionaires are saying, and this, like, I've seen Republicans do this. It's almost like opposite world on that side. They're mad at the university. They want the deans and they want them to step down and resign.
They can't
because they say you're allowing anti-Semitism on campus. Now, I would imagine the pro-Palestinian contingent of people want them to step down as well, but they want them to step down because they feel like you're promoting Zionism. This is such a microcosm of our society, and it's such an interesting conundrum to find these universities in, because I doubt they can exist without these huge donations from these billionaires who are now threatening to withhold money to like punish the university. I don't know what anyone wants out of this situation.
Right, and the school is like, the fuck we supposed to do? We didn't know they were going to start protesting.
Like, it makes me wonder if they even cracked down on the commencement thing because they had pressures over them being like, y'all better not let no pro-Palestinian shit happen at the fucking graduation ceremony. And then they're like, fuck, all right, we'll tell her she can't speak. And then just, you know, the domino falls. And now mm-hmm. we're at a point where they're essentially being defunded. And I saw yesterday an article in the Daily Mail, which is a right-wing newspaper. I saw an article where it was like an op-ed or something, and the woman was like, defund the Ivy League or something like that. And here you got Robert Kraft, who, you know, I don't know his politics. I know it's kind of weird because he's like, he was for all this different type of sentence reform and jail reform. He aligned with Roc Nation to help get Meek Mill out of jail and promote stuff like that. But I don't necessarily know that means that someone's progressive or even liberal, because right. you know, Van Jones worked with Trump to get that First Step Act and all this stuff. So mm-hmm. like, you know, when the Republicans are like, shit, we probably going to jail after all this, they start getting deep into sentence reform. So who knows what exactly is happening with his motives, politics.
Yeah, what people's motives are.
But this seemed like a kind of the conservative side to do the, like, I will no longer support this university because y'all having these and they're protests. They're protests. Keep in mind, we're talking about protests. So the university dean can't control a fucking protest because it's a protest.
That's what I was about to say. Like if you're the university, you're like, how can we control the student body? We can't crack down and force these people just to do what we want them to do. It doesn't work like that.
Which leads me to wonder, and only he knows the answer to this, is he pressuring them to go in there, billy clubs and water hoses and dogs? Like, because what do you want from them?
It is
a protest. We have asked them to stop. They will not stop. We said you can't speak at graduation. They don't give a fuck. Now you're saying, I'm going to stop. You guys are allowing anti-Semitism. I am going to stop funding your university. What would you like from me, Robert Kraft?
Right. What would you like from me? Because it's one of those things, like, if I start doing that, then it's going to make us look bad as university. It's going to make students start withdrawing. It's going to have a bunch of lawsuits, like, you know, from us out here whooping these students' asses and shit. What do you want us to do? Kick them out and suspend them and lose money that way, too? It doesn't make sense because universities are a business.
I have no idea what you do about this shit. I've been watching it from a distance and just like everybody else. And, you know, I've seen the debates. I've seen the very liberal people, the very conservative people, and everybody in between. I've heard the protest described as violent. I've seen videos. I've also heard people describe the protest be like that's propaganda to make you against the protest. And I can't rule it out because I saw the same thing happen with black protests. Mm-hmm. Whenever there will be something associated with Black Lives Matter, or we're marching for something dealing with a black person's death or marching for justice and equality, they will be like, oh, you mean you're going to burn down the buildings and attack people? You know, those are violent terrorist organizations. And so I know the playbook for discrediting people, so I don't really know what I'm watching because I'm not there.
Right.
And just because I see a video on a TikTok or something or Instagram doesn't really mean I'm seeing what I'm seeing anymore.
Right.
People frame shit differently. People get shit taken down all the time now because it's like, oh, this video is actually from 2014 and it happened in Egypt and it has nothing to do with the current protests. Right. And I'm like, well, the caption underneath didn't say that. It said this shit happened yesterday. You know, I'm very much like interested in watching this unfold, but I have no solutions. And at the end of the day, I think you were about to point out, or you did point out, at the end of the day, this university actually can't do, it's not free in Palestine.
Right.
It doesn't control the government.
Nobody's going to be free. Nobody's going to be loose. Ain't no war going to stop.
Yeah, and so seeing the billionaire or the students become hyper-focused on the university is interesting because I don't know what it would do. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's like the Vietnam protest or something where they've protested on campuses and kids protested in America about Vietnam and, you know, people feel like that was part of the reason you got people to come home, got the soldiers to come back home. So maybe it's like this is just the place to protest. I don't know.
Yeah, that and this is, I don't know if this makes sense or not, but I'm going to say this. Some of this is social media, pulling social media in real life. You know, you have both extremes and you kind of have the university in the middle. And I think that for a lot of people, this is a distraction, you know, from other things for some people. Not everybody. There's some people that's truly protesting, but there are some people with participating and doing this is a distraction from other things happening. You know, we can talk about this versus talking about how fucked up it is here in America. We can talk about this versus talk about, you know, what the Supreme Court is doing and all these other things. Not for everybody, but for a small percentage of people, I think that this is social media brought to life, in my opinion. You know, like a lot of these talking points and extremes on social media, when you start seeing this shit happen in real life, it's fucking chaos. And it's chaos online too, but people don't consider it chaos because it's online. But once you start actually putting this shit like outside of the typing and you actually physically start seeing it, it is complete. Sometimes it can turn to a complete shit show and there's no answers.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know. And I guess we'll see where it goes from here. But my guess is no matter, it basically, once the protest starts, the dean's fired. Because I just don't see how they navigate this in a way that don't get them fired.
Right.
If and you crack down on the protests and free speech, you definitely are pissing off your campus and you're probably going to get fired. If you, and especially if it's to appease the billionaire donors and shit, it writes itself in a way that says, this motherfucker got to go. And if you sit up there and say, hey, it's free speech, we're allowing that on our campus, we don't think these protests are violent, then it becomes, well, they actually are violent, you're anti-Semitic, and you're getting fired because we're the billionaires and we got the money in the pool. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like, well, then who wants the job then? Because, you know, you fired and you put somebody, anybody that has that position, it's going to happen. And let's say the protests stop or they cease to exist. You put somebody else in the job, protest is going to happen again. So they're going to get fired too. So it's like, who the fuck want the job when in any time anything happens beyond the university's control, my job is on the line.
I honestly think a lot of the right wing people in our country would like to see these Ivy League institutions shut down.
Which is crazy
because a lot of them come from it. A lot of them have ties to it.
They got degrees from them.
All that legacy money and all that shit and wealth that they've accumulated. It's a very small circle of people, and yet somehow you know what it is? Now that I look at it, now that I say that out loud, it's for Republicans, we don't actually have policies.
No.
We don't actually want to govern. So what we're going to do instead is focus on social issues and then replace that. And so we know a thing people hate is these kids protesting for Palestine. We're just going to keep harping on it as if private education is run amok. We need to defund the schools and all this shit. And really, it's really about keeping that hate going so that you don't really want to solve any problem.
Nope.
You just would like to keep, you know, it might as well be trans people to them.
Yeah, so that's what I said. It's a distraction from the real issues.
Yeah. The Arizona House of Representatives voted 32-28 to repeal a 160-year-old law banning abortion. The state Supreme Court had ruled that the law could be enforced on April 9th. So they basically repealed that shit and said, no, it can't. And I believe three Republicans crossed over to vote with the Democrats to repeal this law, to make sure this law doesn't come into effect.
Yeah, people are tired of this. Like, you know, and it's one of these things where they keep running on that, and lots and lots and lots of people go, we don't want this bullshit.
Right. Also, I wonder if this is savvy from some of these Republicans, like at least three of them, because having this as an issue in November is going to lose them votes. It's just, we have seen this over and over for the last 2 years, that when abortion is on the ballot, Republicans are losing badly. And I wonder if this is an effort to somehow try to like avert this becoming a November issue in Arizona, which was a swing state that went for Biden. I wonder if this is them being like actually smart and saying, let's just repeal it now so that hopefully these white women that would turn their backs on the Republican Party will actually go, well, I'm okay with it now. Now, who knows? It's still a national issue. You would hope people be smarter than that, but I don't have that much faith in white women voters to be like savvy enough to go, no, we can't even give an inch on this. We need to make sure that we have Democrats in the Arizona Senate because and state, because at some point when it's time for some actual legislation, we would like to be sending Democrats there that will somehow put the right to abortion back into play rather than Republicans who are probably not going to give a fuck once they make the office. It's right. Like, we did what we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it just made me wonder. I don't know the answer, but I just know that might be a smart move.
Yeah, and it would not be surprising if Trump start kind of backing away from this topic too.
Well, he's been backing away.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Because one of the things where if you stick with this is a losing thing. You will not win if you put your feet in the mud on this one.
Mm-mm. I just feel like they're scared, and these are the signs that I noticed that I feel like, you know, your Stephen A. Smith, your Charlamagne, the guys, and all these other black intellectuals, I put that in quote, all these other black folks that are telling us about how bad Democrats are and how Trump is definitely going to win and there's nothing we can do about it and just it's inevitable. He's so popular. Look at the polls. And I'll keep going. I don't know. This abortion thing feels like a poison pill that is killing Republican candidates left and right. This should be a huge recognition of the fact that even Republicans are saying, despite all your Republicans going to kill us in the November, even Republicans are like, whoa, 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 not this shit. We can't win with this. So I feel like this is a good sign because it's actually on the ballot in a lot of other states. So maybe Arizona got it out there, but and we'll see if that means it's off of their ballot or not.
We will see, because bullshit like this, yeah, they fuck around and come back, then they just turn around and reverse it again.
Someone will challenge it, maybe. Someone might bring up another bill. I want to see if something happens before November. You know, the savvy thing to do would be to wait until after November and then bring back, like,
right.
Okay, now we have a Republican majority. Actually, you bitches can't get abortion. Ha, 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 we hate black, we hate women.
Right.
But I don't know if that's going to happen. Social media users are distraught after Biden officially signs bill that could ban TikTok. Mm-hmm. So they must secure a new owner within months or face a complete ban from the United States. The law is not expected to cause any immediate disruption to TikTok. Anticipated legal challenges and various obstacles related to selling the app are likely to result in months of delay. For now, TikTok fans can keep the app as usual. Still, after the announcement, fans of the platform took the X to express their views on the TikTok ban. Took the X? Why not on TikTok? Anyway, with some feeling frustrated about the government's decision. The CEO of TikTok also spoke out about the bill. Yeah, I mean, I guess social media users aren't necessarily the unbiased group here.
Right, because they're using the platform, they enjoy the platform, and, you know, I don't know everything, but it's one of those things where they don't give a fuck about, you know, the shit that the government actually needs to care about. You know, hey, dog, you know, they're still in this, they're still in that. They go, I don't care, I just want to be able to use my TikTok. And you're like, well, it ain't that simple, y'all. Like, you say that now, something happened to you, then you're going to have a fit and look at us, be like, why didn't y'all protect us?
Yeah, my question for I've seen some sentiments about this ban on all sides of it. And I do have some questions about it that I don't think satisfies either side of this thing, but they're the questions that I would need answered. And the first one is, people that think they're only banning TikTok because TikTok is the place where people are giving us the real stuff that the government is afraid of us hearing, I would say that sounds like bullshit to me. And very anecdotal, because show me the thing that's on TikTok that isn't allowed everywhere.
Right.
All that shit is everywhere. Period. Like, you can't show me a video on TikTok that they're like, well, it can never happen on Facebook. No, it can. So on that side of the aisle, I think they're being paranoid. I think they're hyper online. And I think this is also what happens when you overemphasize the power of online and not real life.
Mm-hmm.
Not that online has no power, but you start thinking it's a huge conspiracy out to get you when it's just not really, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
Okay, so that's one. I know what kind of stuff goes viral over there. I also know a lot of times it can be unfact checked. It can be rampant. It can be and they still tamp down and manipulate stuff on TikTok. Like, it's not like they're just like it's a free for all and the best float to the top. No, they shadow ban shit. They when there's misinformation and stuff that goes viral, they shut it down, like the Osama bin Laden letter and all this shit that after October 7th, they had to shut that shit down. So so it's not that different than other platforms, which brings me to my second point. I'm not 100% sure how this is not, I guess, I don't understand why it being Chinese owned is the distinction when Facebook clearly stole a fucking election.
Mm-hmm.
When Instagram is causing people to want to harm themselves. When Twitter is run by a guy who's essentially a fucking troll, shit-posting Nazi. What is... Why aren't those regulated as well? Like, why isn't that reined in to some extent? Because I know other countries don't even allow all that shit. You know, there's stuff you can't do on Twitter in Britain that you can do in America. You know, things, threats, doxing, exposing. Like, there's shit that you legally, there are legal repercussions for hate speech over there. And they just don't let it happen over there as much. Over here, it seems like a fucking free-for-all. So is it free-for-all if it's American-owned and the Americans that own it are these white dudes like Elon yep. Musk and Mark Zuckerberg? Because to me, I'm not really sure why the fucking priority would be to rein in TikTok and not them as well. What the fuck did they do to deserve some sort of, like, less oversight or whatever? I guess the ultimate assumption is that somehow TikTok would not be beholden to America if you actually, like,
mm-hmm. yeah, you know they won't say spy stuff and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, but like, you know who else is spying on us? Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes, they are.
They got all our metadata and shit too. They know when we post what and our passwords and all that shit. I do find it, like I said, I know my questions don't satisfy either extreme of this conversation, and right. that's fine. I don't need to be on the side. But both of those arguments seem to have holes in them, and I don't understand. And I mean, I guess maybe there's some shit I just don't know. I never worked in the government, so I don't know everything about, you know, like, the ways that these things are being reported back in China and the information they have on us. And so I don't know enough to truly speak with any authority on this. Democrats and Republicans agreeing and Joe Biden signs it does give me like a, cause I, for whatever these motherfuckers on social media think, they're not serious people to me.
Mm-mm.
But I feel like, especially Joe Biden, that's a serious person. He treats the job like it is a job. Like, he's right. not just trying to do shit to own the Republicans or own the whatever. He's just, this is what I think would be the smartest move for the country. If he thinks it's a smart move, if Democrats think it's a smart move, I'm not questioning if it's a smart move, but I don't feel like they've given us enough to make me feel like they're telling us the real reason why. I feel like
right.
it's like, it's not like, I'm sure the real reason why is like, well, it's not American owned and China kind of can run the shit and they got our, but then the next question obviously becomes like, and why would it be okay if an American owned it, and what would ensure that it's still not happening? I have so many right. questions. Anyway, a lot of people just mad and had, they were just, you know how they are. They're like, cereal mm-hmm. costs $7, but we banned the TikTok. Like, I'm sorry that you don't know how to make an analogy. I'm sorry. I hope you go viral. I hope your tweet gets retweeted. But that's not a serious thing you just said. Like, I want my student loans forgiven, but you banning TikTok? All right. Well, congrats. A lot of shit is happening in the government. It's not just one thing at a time. It's, anyway.
Yeah, and I think that this TikTok was a piece of a larger bill, so they had a bunch of shit kind of all mixed in there. They was like, fine, we'll sign that too.
I just want to know where am I going to learn the floss dance?
Where am I going to learn?
I can't do all that Fortnite shit if I don't see the kids on TikTok first.
I love the TikToks, and they be showing like little snippets and how to cook and shit in 45 seconds.
Where are well-endowed women gonna post videos about how they're 40 and they don't know if they'll ever find a man? Would you please like this? Because I've only seen that on TikTok. It's not happening in real life.
No, it's not, and nowhere else.
Okay, all my 40-year-old single women friends got pride. Okay, they're not just like throwing me the cleavage and being like, well, can you at least heart emoji this? No, they're not doing that.
In real life, you just go and just hit a heart emoji.
Where are the 40-year-old hot moms getting out of the pool in Florida? Like, where is that happening anywhere else? It's not happening anywhere else.
Mm-mm.
Okay, I need that. I need people that that walk up to folks and pretend that they on the phone until the person want to fight them. That's not just happening all the, so now I gotta get it on Facebook Reels because y'all are taking it on TikTok.
The Reels don't cut it.
It's not the same.
I need the pure cocaine.
YouTube Shorts don't hit the same.
I clear they don't.
Gayle King and Charles Barkley in King Charles CNN talk show run after 6 months. So I know, you know, that show was on CNN. There was a lot of hype for when it first dropped. I feel like it dropped and it never really took off. Nope. It had a few moments where, you know, they tried to get like some viral moments out of social media, but it was either the bad kind of viral where people would just hate on it, or it was just like the, that's nice, but it didn't go super viral in that way.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, they didn't even pay no attention. It, like, literally came and went. I didn't even know it went off the air.
Yeah, I think it's hard for, one, these are two extremely busy people that ain't got to do this. Also, this was the direction CNN wanted to take when they tried to do the, like, we want to appeal to the moderates, this demographic of people, I think, that literally do not exist. Where, like, they're okay with you being a little bit Republican and a little bit Democrat. I'm like, I think we're done with that. And if you don't understand, fine. But clearly people are finding a hard time finding audiences that just are in the middle.
Yeah, they are.
And I think that's supposed to be Charles's appeal, is he's a maverick. He's a wild card, but he's very charismatic and he's kind of in the middle. He'll say something that you agree with as a Democrat, then he'll say something that makes you mad as a Democrat, and vice versa if you're a Republican. And that's, you know, what we're supposed to get from this program. But and I guess it didn't work.
That's not going to draw ratings for a long period of time. Not in this climate.
Yeah, and so I have a homie that worked there, so I don't take any solace in knowing that his show doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, and ratings, as I said, is always kind of a double-edged sword because they kind of make decisions. They use the ratings to justify whatever decision they were making.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because you'll find shows that have less viewership that networks will stick by no matter what. And you'll find shows with more viewership that networks are like, it just got to go. We don't fuck with it. Its November premiere attracted 500,000 viewers, according to Nielsen data. I don't know if it like fell off or what, but you know, with a lot of these, Warner Brothers Discovery being, it's a subsidiary of Warner Brothers Discovery. So, you know, they was writing off Batgirl and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, they had the CEO leave. You had, Don Lemon, the Cuomo stuff. Like it's a lot of upheaval there, so it probably was asking a lot because all that stuff wasn't necessarily happening when they announced the show.
Right.
Probably asking a lot for these people to be able to have a show consistently on for years.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know, so I never really got into the show. I'm not a fan of Charles Barkley's politics. I do love his basketball stuff. I do love his charisma.
I love him on Inside the NBA.
Yeah, I think he's very funny and all that stuff. I'm not some hardcore militant against Charles Barkley, but I was upset when he did the stereotypical black man on TV thing in 2024, which is to say how Democrats ain't shit, and you know, and I just did not like that. You know, I don't care if it's Charles. I'm a black man. I represent the 80% of us that's definitely voting Democrat. And I'm tired of hearing this motherfucking contrarian shit on TV. Mm-hmm. And it's always made to seem as if it's speaking for all of us when it's fucking not. And it's always made to seem as if Democrats have a black man problem and we're the weakest link and we're gonna fuck this up for everybody. And I'm just so sick of it that I don't care if it's him saying it. It doesn't matter. When it's Charlamagne saying it, I find it equally as ignorant and uninformed and misleading. When it's Stephen A. saying it, I feel the same way. And when it's Charles Barkley saying it, my favorite player growing up, it don't matter to me. I will always point out that, hey, you're not giving the whole picture. And you're a man that said you would have voted for Nikki Haley. So I don't trust your judgment on this, and I'm not required to just because you have a TV show.
Mm-mm.
You know, it just is what it is. So, Tupac Shakur's estate threatens to sue Drake over diss track featuring AI generated Tupac. So Drake's song, forget the fucking name of it. Whatever the name of it was dissing Kendrick Lamar, and it had Tupac and Snoop Dogg with AI generated voices that basically just completely, it wasn't even written in their voices. It was just Drake's voice, but sounding like Tupac and Snoop.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, his estate said it's a flagrant violation of the law and blatant abuse of his legacy. And in a Wednesday cease and desist letter obtained exclusively by Billboard litigator Howard King, it told Drake that he must confirm that he will pull down his tailor-made freestyle in less than 24 hours or the estate will pursue all legal remedies against him. The estate is deeply dismayed and disappointed by your unauthorized use of Tupac's voice and personality. Not only is the record a flagrant violation of Tupac's publicity and estate legal rights, it is also a blatant abuse of the legacy of one of the greatest hip-hop artists of all time. The estate would never have given its approval for this use. And I think one thing people, I've seen people try to make this like logic leap. But when Kendrick used an interview that was previously recorded with Tupac on To Pimp a Butterfly, to me, that is completely different than here's some new Tupac raps that he wrote. He didn't fake any of that audio. It's already been recorded. I don't know if he got approval from the state or not. I would assume he got some level of approval just because you put it on a commercial album and you ain't get sued. So,
right.
So you must have went through some
legal channels. Whoever had the legal rights to it, right? Right.
But I can see why this is a inflection point. Simply because if this estate allows this, what's next?
Right.
Where do we stop? And I've been saying this about AI the whole time. A lot of the AI shit is theft. And then we're calling it innovation, but it's just theft. It's like calling LimeWire innovation when LimeWire was us stealing music from artists and keeping it for ourselves and not paying them shit.
Right.
We was essentially going in the store stealing their albums and being like, it's innovation. Look at the technology. It's like the technology to steal. AI does that. You know, the people like, I can AI a new Prince song. Yeah, but what if Prince's estate is like, we didn't approve that?
Right. They like, the fuck is this? No.
How far does it go, by the way? Like, can I take Prince's estate and make them make the, I mean, can I take Prince's music and AI put it into a machine, whatever, and come out and he's saying shit he would have never said in real life?
Right. You know what I'm saying? They have to draw lines.
Can I have Prince AI be like Heil Hitler and some shit and be like, hey, it's just AI, man. It's the technology. We just using technology out here in the wild, wild west. Like, nah, somebody was eventually gonna sue, especially when the music came into it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because if Drake fought it and it went to court, that's almost more interesting than if he complies with the cease and desist.
Yeah.
You know, because if it goes to court, we may get some actual, because this is going to happen at some point. We're going to get some laws about AI. This shit where they're just operating all willy-nilly,
mm-mm,
and they can literally make a deep fake of Joe Biden saying some wild shit, and it could be the day before the election, and motherfuckers fall for it. That is too dangerous for us to let it be unregulated. And I'm wondering what will be the stopgap. My guess is it'll be greed, not civic responsibility.
Mm-mm.
My guess is it'll be somebody used AI to make Batman the movie and the good version by using all of Zack Snyder's films, but then like changing the AI and changing the plot and all this shit, and then they'll get sued by a fucking Warner Brother who does have the money.
Right.
And my guess is that's what's going to happen, because right now the greedy corporations are talking about what they can do to us, right? I can steal your work. I don't need as many employees. I can write my own script.
The other way around, it's a different story.
Right. The second that some private citizen or some company goes, well, since we just
stealing shit.
Here's my AI Batman movie that's actually good, but uses all the footage from The Dark Knight. And not The Dark Knight, because that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But they use all the footage from Batman vs. Superman. And then you're going to get the fucking pantsuit off of you.
And then laws will be made about it.
Right. That's what I'm guessing is going to happen. All right, let's see. Anything else for this section? No, let's go to some other stuff. Let's talk about some other stuff. Let me pull up my other segment music. How about some white people news?
White people news. We're bringing egg salad to the barbecue. We might be problematic or a little bit dim. That's so silly harsh on our fragile pigs. It's white people news.
Oh, yes. Let's take it down a notch. See what the white's talking about.
Not take it down.
Okay. We got us all relax. Christina Hendricks. Ooh. She starred in Mad Men.
Okay, I didn't watch Mad Men.
She looks breathtaking in a lace bridal gown and veil in the first snap from wedding to George Bianchini in New Orleans. The most beautiful weekend of my life.
Oh, that's sweet.
The Mad Men star, 48, who opened up about tying the knot in New Orleans in 2023, followed through with her plans and said, "I do," to George in the Big Easy. The Good Girl star wore a stunning Katya custom lace bridal gown with a high neck, high sleeves, and an A-line skirt. She wore an old-fashioned veil with a lace cap over her long red curls and two silver-gray bows, in keeping with the vintage nature of the venue.
Oh, that's pretty.
Bianchini, a camera operator known for his work on the TV series Peripheral and The Right Stuff, looked handsome in a burgundy and cream plaid suit with a pink button-down shirt. Yeah, you know, they actually look kind of laid back. Like, I'm sure they're rich and all that stuff, but this actually looks kind of casual. Like, they, like,
it does.
Like, maybe they didn't want to go all out. Now, they might have gone all out, and we just ain't seen it in the
first. Yeah, it looks casual, casually expensive.
Yeah. And Christina Hendricks is pretty famous. You know, she's elite milk, as they call it. Okay. She's high on the white woman scale of sex pots.
Okay.
So she was like, when she was on Mad Men, it was a lot of thirsting after her, and because they never really showed her from the back, it was a lot of brothers assuming she was you know, thicked out back there. Much to my chagrin, not, but it's okay, you know, that doesn't make her not elite milk. Christina Penn on Saturday, April 20th, 2024, "I married George Bianchini. It was the most beautiful weekend of my life. Thank you to all of our friends and family for joining us." They exchanged vows at Napoleon House in the French Quarter. The venue got its name because it once offered as a place of refuge for Napoleon Bonaparte during his exile from France. Garbage lead singer Shirley Manson, I guess the name of the band is Garbage. Because okay. If not, that was very mean.
Right?
Garbage lead singer Shirley.
You're like, the trash. You're just trash lead right. Single.
Trash ass Shirley Manson officiated the ceremony, and the couple exchanged their vows. She told people seeing the dress for the first time made her cry because it's so beautiful. Among the 76 guests. So, yeah, they did do a nice, small, traditional ceremony.
Yeah, compared to some of the other ones I've heard, that is tiny.
Mad Men creator Matt Wiener, Good Girls co-star Retta and Mae Whitman, along with designer Christian Siriano. Yeah, I can see Christian Siriano definitely dressing her a lot because he loves the unconventional. And, you know, she's 5 pounds bigger than a 75-pound starlet, so they got to go. She got to get the special tailoring, you know. That's how Hollywood is. It's fucked up. It's like, oh, wait, you weigh 101 pounds? I don't know if we're going to have enough dress for you, sis. You need to find. You know, they did that to Leslie Jones. The reception included a sit-down dinner with a decadent fare that included steak and shrimp and grits with muffaletta for a late-night snack. In lieu of a wedding cake, they chose individual Banana Foster for their guests, flambéed with each guest right at the table. Ooh. Banana Foster is the solar opposites actress' favorite dessert. She is solar opposites, too?
I didn't know that.
I didn't even know she was in there. Who does she play?
That's what I was about to ask you. Who she play?
Yeah. Now I got to look it up. Solar opposites, Christina Hendricks. She's the voice of Sherry.
Oh! Oh, wow. I did not know that.
In the wall.
I did not know that.
I love Sherry. I mean, I love Christina Hendricks too. She seems cool. She's like a good egg, you know. I've never seen her in no trouble. She always got the cleavage popping, you know. She's just here to act and smush them things together. And you know what? Good for her. I'm glad she got her a man, good rich man.
Come on.
It was black people at her wedding.
Ain't child. Don't nobody hate smushing things together.
Yeah. Do your thing, Chris. Do your thing. All right, let's see what else we got in this white people news now. As the Lord provides, the Lord takes away.
Uh-oh.
Ryan Seacrest and Aubrey Page break up after 3 years, but they plan to stay in each other's lives. Oh, thank God. Oh.
Ryan Seacrest, that nigga keeps a job. I'm surprised they lasted this long. Child. If she wasn't a talk show or speaking gig, I didn't even find time for her.
I am just shocked that I'm just glad and relieved that they plan to stay in each other's lives. I didn't know. I was so worried that somehow they were going to stop talking to each other.
it was going to be the end. Oh,
now
no!
Now that I know these two strangers will be in each other's lives, whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
What does that mean?
I don't know, because don't sound like they got kids.
Right. Well, they did give each other herpes, so they'll always be in each other's lives. After 3 beautiful years together, Ryan and Aubrey have mutually decided to part ways. A source close to the couple tells People. Come on, it was Ryan. They plan to stay in each other's lives as good friends and support one another's endeavors. I love when this happens and then eventually one of the people that isn't talking to people, you know, like she comes out later and she's like, no, fuck him. He was cheating on me. It's like, oh, yeah, okay. So he gave the statement that y'all were going to be good friends.
Right.
Y'all are not good friends. Mortal enemies? Oh, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I noted.
They first went public in May 2021 when they were spotted together in the Hamptons celebrating Memorial Day, while Seacrest, 49, and Page, 26.
Oh!
So it's a 23-year difference. Old enough to be her daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Attended a handful of events over the years, including the LACM. I don't care about that shit. The premiere of Jennifer Lopez's halftime documentary. Okay.
It's everything but the article.
Yeah. safe to say the best part of then they shared it on 2021 and on social media where he said the best part of my 2021 was meeting the most incredible woman, blah blah blah. Fast forward to now, they're good friends, they'll always be in each other's lives, but not together in each other's lives, more like separately on her side of the life and his side. And that's them together, you know.
Child, good for you.
Yeah, we love to see it. That's her. That's on her page. Look, the man got a lot of money.
Yep, he keeps a job. I told you, got 45 jobs.
I can't really knock her.
I don't know,
for deciding to cash in on that 26-year-oldness.
I don't know what the seasons is, but when one show ends, another show begins, and he doing that too. He fly from coast to coast. Well, you know, one show ends, he flying to the next one.
Right, right. All right, let's go to the next one. Kelly Ripa considers ditching her signature blonde hair. She says, my hair wants to be gray. Oh, my goodness. This is shocking breaking news right here. Mm. This is Kelly Ripa considering going gray, y'all. She been blonde forever.
Yes, she has.
She 53. She's still all blonde. I mean, look, I'm not knocking it. Do what you got to do. I understand it's showbiz, you know what I'm saying? You got to show them something. I got my hair colored last night. I cannot tell you how long it takes now to cover my gray hair. She told her husband and co-host Mark Consuelos on Wednesday's episode of Live with Kelly and Mark. The longtime talk show host, 53, added the process feels endless. And Consuelos, also 53, even checked in on her if she was done yet. Now, his hair is jet black. And he 53. I do wonder if he's going to say he don't want to get his hair colored. Because, come on.
I don't know.
You jet black, bro? You jet black 53? No gray?
I'm 40-something. I got gray 45.
I think y'all both graying it up over there. And y'all both lying to America. I mean, I guess it's easy for me to say, but I always thought Gray looked good on people.
Me too.
Maybe I'm wrong or something. Maybe something.
I think a lot of people fight against it because they see the gray. They're like, I'm old. Yeah. I mean, I hate to inform you.
You're not fooling any of us.
That's what I had to tell some family members. I was like, nigga, you 65.
It's like when them brothers put that Beijing in their hair, or you see them transformation videos on Facebook where it's like a 70-year-old man with a cul-de-sac, and then 5 minutes later he's got a rug on his head that look like he look like motherfucking 1995 LJ from the Hornets, and you're like, there's no fucking way your hair is like that and you're that old. Mm-mm. You're walking with a cane, sir. No one thinks that's you. But maybe, you know, all you need is a headshot for the dating app, so maybe I'm wrong. It takes hours and hours, and I swear this morning I still see gray hair. My hair wants to be gray. It just wants to be gray. Consuelos chimed in and asked if she was ready to begin letting the gray happen. I would do it. I just don't think, you know, you see my gray hair. It's not like a gorgeous silver or a pretty white. It's almost like translucent. It's almost translucent in its quality, which I think is weird. It's almost like colorless hair, she said.
It takes a while. People think when you quote unquote go gray, it just turns that way. No, it transitions into that silver white.
Here's the thing though, Karen, dye it that way. Dye it gray.
You can do that if you choose to.
Yeah. If that's your thing, is like it's not the right shade of gray, dye it gray. Then you have that luxurious grayness that you want. I don't know. Anyway, it's your hair. Do what you want to do, sis. I'm not telling you how to live. Sonya Morgan says farewell to her beloved New York City townhouse.
Now, who is this?
I don't know who Sonya... Karen, this is White People News. Okay.
Sometimes you be knowing who the whites is.
Morgan is auctioning off her beloved New York City townhouse next month after 11 years on and off the market. According to the Post, the concierge auctions will sell the Upper East Side five-story home online on May 29th with luxury broker Adam Modlin of the Modlin Group. First of all, five stories in New York City?
I know that bitch cost a grip.
Woo! Woo! Five stories in New York City is they're buildings that don't have five stories in New York City.
Right? Whole ass buildings.
The sale of the Real Housewives of New York City alums townhome, so that's what she does, will kick off with no minimum on May 15th. Paulina Kimball, Vice President of Business Development at Concierge Auction, says the beginning bids are expected to range between $1.75 million to $3.75 million. And then this is what it looks like on the inside. And this is, listen, let me tell you, this is
for New York, that's space.
That right there is balling in New York.
Chad, that right there, somebody, whole ass unit, bathroom, kitchen, everything.
The way that thing opens out to the street too, where you can walk out there on the patio and chill, like that's real as fuck. Look at this kitchen.
Wow.
Okay, kitchen got enough room to put a table in the middle. That's
balling in New York.
Yeah. Kitchen got a fridge. I don't see a washer dryer, but I mean no one has that. Okay, it's very few. Look at this bathroom. You can't touch the sink from the toilet.
Well, you're not bumping into it.
This is amazing in New York. They don't do this anywhere in New York.
No, they don't, baby.
I love the glass on this shower too. It's like glass, but it's got brick inside. That's fancy.
Ain't that pretty?
Mm-hmm. The bed got one of them things on the top.
Canopy.
Thank you, Karen. It got one of them things. Canopy. She got a canopy bed. Man, listen. And that also opens out to the patio. Is that a different room open up?
Probably, yes. Man, you said it was five stories.
So this must be the guest bedroom right here. Because we got a little bed for a kid and then like a bed for an adult.
Like two twins, yeah.
And then this one, she got a different one open up to the patio. God damn. She got stairs?
Nigga, she got stairs.
She got stairs in her home. And not stairs to like a loft.
Mm-mm.
Stairs.
Not stairs to the attic. Like, okay. No.
Another bathroom.
Oh, that right there, that is a gorgeous ass bathroom.
Now I'm a little skeptical of this bathroom because I don't see a toilet.
The toilet might not be. Oh, you know what? This might be one of them vanity rooms because you know she has like her thing on the side, like where she do her makeup on one side. Mm-hmm. This might be the room she just soaks in.
Okay, because I don't know if that makes sense. Listen, I'm scarred by Airbnb in New York because if they don't show you can't just assume. Mm-mm. Like, I was in an Airbnb one day, and I was just like, how am I supposed to get out the shower and literally the toilet and the sink connected to each other? I don't feel comfortable with any of this. How is the toilet? And then one of them, the toilet was in another room in the same bathroom. How does that make sense? How does that make sense? Anyway. Ooh, they got like an outside little area with a garden.
Well, I liked it. That's pretty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know the rats and roaches love it over there.
Chad, that's big time. You know, outside spaces is something special in New York.
Got a garden fountain with a koi pond. Not the koi. Y'all got fish up there y'all not eating? Right? Girl, you rich. You right? rich.
You got fish on your stat?
I bet koi some good eating. I'll fry one of them koi's up, girl.
Come on. Buttermilk you some koi.
Big enough to go in my hand, big enough to go in the pan.
Ain't that the truth?
Okay. I had that
with some slaw.
Fried, dyed, and laid to the side.
Child, you know us. We'll fry anything.
It's like, I don't know if this fireplace is real or not, but it looks like they got another dining room area. Mm-hmm. And then another living quarters.
This
living
is
room
a
type.
Huge place.
Right? She did the damn thing. All this from calling people bitches and throwing shit at their face, man. I've been looking at this reality show shit the wrong way.
Oh, the wrong way. What is she, Real Housewives of New York? They said,
do a Real Housewives of podcast, and I'm there. I'm going to be throwing stuff at people's face and calling them bitch. I got to get this bread.
You bitch.
I got to get this money. I'll let somebody beat me up for if I can get a mansion out of it. they gonna be like Rod on TV fighting. I'll just be like, yep, absolutely.
Her wig is coming off.
Jelly Roll's wife, Bunny XO, reveals he got off the internet due to incessant bullying about his weight. On her Dumb Blonde podcast, Bunny, who married the singer in 2016, said he doesn't show the public how much fat shaming truly hurts him. Now, Jelly Roll is a dude that I think he went kind of viral for winning, like, I forget what award he won at an award show, but he gave a great speech, and then people was like, oh my God, this dude is so cool. And he's like a white dude with tattoos and all this shit, and a bigger dude. As usual, the internet can't just
let
shit be.
Right.
You know, it's one of the reasons I always laugh when people are fat shamed like Jason Whitlock, but then are acting like, oh no, but it's different for you or whatever. I'm like, is Mm-mm. it though?
When I do something to piss you off, I'll be in that group.
Yeah,
too.
Right. Is it? Let's just be nice to each other today. But yeah, earlier this week, she shed light on the internet fat shaming Jelly Roll 39 has fallen victim to during the latest episode of Dumb Blonde podcast. My husband got off the internet because he's so tired of being bullied about his fucking weight, and that makes me want to cry because he's the sweetest angel, baby. My husband doesn't show it to you guys, but I'm going to have a very vulnerable moment here. It hurts him. He hasn't posted on Twitter or Instagram since April 8th or 9th, respectively. He shared a quick TikTok of himself meeting Troy Aikman on April 19th. Bunny XO, who wed the Need a Favor artist back in 2016, continued by reminding celebrities that they don't have to endure hatred spewed online. The internet can say whatever the fuck they want about you, and they say, well, you're a celebrity, you're supposed to be able to handle it. No, the fuck we're not. Enough is enough.
Right, because they're people too.
Yeah, it's ironic because I shared this article, no comment, just on my Twitter, and a person responded to it like, you know, when are people going to realize that, you know, it doesn't matter what people say about you, blah, 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 or something like that. And all I was thinking was like, you don't even have your picture in your up.
Right, because you don't want to be judged.
Like, let's just be honest. You facing something completely different than what these motherfuckers be going through. No one's talking about you for the most part.
Right.
So, you know, like, you not, like, until you really got hit with that level of fucking, like, vitriol, until, like, your face is out there, people, you can't ignore it. I don't want to hear like, well, I would be, well, we don't know what you would be because you've never been tested. It's easy to, correct. Everyone thinks they know when they don't know.
Yes, you never know until you've been put in that situation. Everybody, you know, goes, well, just do this and just do that and just ignore. Yeah, but when you got 100,000, that's right. different between the 10 that you got, and you know, you flip out over a 10.
Right.
So imagine, you know, hundreds of millions of just negative replies and response and all across all forms of social media.
And keep in mind, he's not one of these toxic people that's always saying or doing some shit where people can kind of excuse it and be like, well, it's really because he's an asshole, so we have to call him out. And I don't care if I fat shame him. He a dude that just mind his business and stay positive.
Right.
And people still did it. It's crazy. Name of writer on Taylor Swift TTPD album review removed due to threats of violence. Pace magazine announced they removed the name of the writer from their review of Taylor Swift's The Torture Poets Department album due to threats of violence following the review of one of her previous albums. Editors note there is no byline in this review due to how in 2019 when Pace reviewed Lover, the writer was sent threats of violence from readers who disagree with the work. We care more about the safety of our staff than a name attached to an article, they said. What I think is interesting about this is she's put out albums since then.
Mm-hmm.
So was it that because this was going to be a review that said it's bad that they were like, take the name off? Because
right.
like if she put out albums since then and y'all weren't taking the name off, then I don't know. Maybe like I guess when it was good, it did. Y'all were like, cool, put the name on it. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm on their review site. They gave it a 3.6. I don't know what that's out of.
Right. Is it 4? So
is it
3?
If it's 3.6 out of 10, that's obviously bad. If it's 3.6 right. out of 5, that's in a little, that's right above mid.
Right. And if it's, you know, at a 4, that's really good. Yeah.
Right. And it, yeah, either way, I haven't listened to it.
I haven't listened to the album yet.
It's just interesting that they're so afraid of her fans like that. And it is one of those things too where like I doubt you're gonna find an incident of actual violence with a Taylor Swift fan, period. Like what, where like we have some proof of like, yo, remember that time Taylor Swift fan beat up the journalist that wrote the thing? You're probably right. not. But that level of vitriol and stuff can be scary to people online.
Yes.
And from being fair, we've seen it happen with the Beehive. We've seen it happen with the Navy. Like these fan bases that define themselves as I'm a stan of this artist. It really puts the fanaticism in fan, right? It's like
right.
something that me and you might read and disagree with. You know, we've read Beyonce reviews where we were like, I disagree with this shit, and mm-hmm. here's why.
Mm-hmm.
And we break it down on the show. We eviscerate it. I've never thought, let me find this person to threaten them.
Because it ain't that important to me.
And it don't even take a lot of people. She clearly has a lot of fans. But even if a handful of them, if 0.001% of them are like, I fucking kill you, bitch. Don't you talk about Taylor.
Right.
Then it's going to feel like everybody to that person, you know? So, but yeah, they scared. That's some elite white people news. They scared as hell.
I guess that they is.
They're like, no, don't bring that smoke over here. Let's do one more. All right. I'm enjoying white people news today.
Me too.
Kim Kardashian admits someone has to take the cardboard sleeve off of her coffee because the sound is like nails on a chalkboard.
Oh, going up and down?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She went on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and she responded to True or False and said, you have someone take the Starbucks sleeves off your coffee because you hate the sound of cardboard. Yes, that's true. I hate the feeling like that sound. Whoever I'm with, I just can't see it being done, or I can't hear it and I can't feel it. The cardboard being moved off a cup is like nails on a chalkboard to me. Yeah, I'm this way with people that sharpen knives. I don't know why, but if you sharpen a knife around me, it is fucking it. I can feel it in my fucking spine.
Is it a certain way?
I don't know. My dad's done it. Anybody? Well, if they do it with the thing, you got to do it with that shing shing thing. If you do it with that, it's something primal in me. It just hits something primal in me. It's like, stop. My dad would do it sometimes to make fun of me or annoy me, but it wasn't a joke. It's not a bit. It really does bother me. So maybe she has that with those cups. I've never noticed it, but that's not my thing, but you know.
Yeah, the only thing that really does that to me is like certain chairs, and I don't know if it's like metal on metal. When they move, they do this like high squeaking, like that right there get on my nerves, like really, really bad. Other than that, most sounds I'm cool with.
Same, yeah. It's just that one sound. You know what? Fuck it. We'll do a couple more. Taylor Swift also broke multiple records at Spotify with her album release, which I mean, that makes sense. It's like Taylor. Hella long. So I think now with the new formula of like you put out long albums with lots of tracks so you can double up on the streaming numbers and get more streams because people are listening to the album for longer.
And they're going to listen to the entire album.
And they're listening to more songs because it's paying you per the song, which is why you're seeing some long albums. Like Cowboy Carter has 27 songs on it. So it's not just Taylor Swift, although I'm sure that'll be the one that pisses everybody off because that's just how, you know, on our side of the aisle, they don't fuck with her. But this one has 16 songs on one track, on one and 16. So she has 32 songs, it sounds like. Let me just make sure that's right. Oh, wait, no, is this? I thought it was a double album. It's only got 16 songs on here. So maybe people told me wrong. They told me that this was
A double album.
A double album with a whole lot of tracks. Am I missing something?
Mm-hmm.
See, 2024, The Torture. Okay, yeah. Okay, so it's actually 31 songs.
Okay.
So like I said, the same Beyonce is putting out longer. It's just, this is the way to get, when you're not getting paid per album, you're now getting paid per stream.
Right.
And people used to do this with double albums when there were physical copies too, because I think it used to count as two albums sold.
It would cost a little bit more.
Yeah, cost a little more, but it would basically help your album sales. Like, oh yeah, I went double platinum. It's like, well, that's because, you know, the same amount of people bought your record.
Right, but you just happened, when they bought it, it counted as two versus the number one.
Right, and also another way to game the system is you make the song shorter. So, like, that's one of the reasons you see, like, hit songs now that be 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Singles that are, like, 2 minutes and a few seconds, which, once again, this isn't judgment. Mm-hmm. So this isn't, you know, I know as soon as I said Taylor Swift and Beyonce, it became a competition to some of you niggas. But to me, it's not judgment. It's just the way of the industry. This is how you make money. Mm-hmm. So even when you see the short song, it's just that makes it more playable.
Yeah, so people will play it over and over again. Yeah. I know I have a tendency to do that with shorter songs.
Yeah, and the longer songs sometimes hurt you because whether it's an artistic integrity thing where you like, well, all my songs need to be 4 minutes because I'm an artiste. Well, you're kind of hurting your bottom line because motherfuckers might not listen to a whole 4 minute song these days.
Right.
And they're definitely not gonna listen to it over and over and over and over again, you know.
It's they jam.
Yeah, if I go to my liked songs right now on Spotify, there's a bunch of songs that are 3 minutes or less. Bunch of them.
How do you search your liked songs?
Well, on the app it just says liked songs under playlist. It's like one of the first playlists for everybody. I mean, that's if you use it the way I use it. I when I like songs, it just goes to my like list.
Oh, yeah. A lot of mine are like 210, 230.
Right.
I got a few 3 minutes.
Glow is 2 minutes and 23 seconds because it's designed to be played over and over and over again. The single she has with Megan Thee Stallion, where you're like, Megan Thee Stallion and Glow together, 2 minutes, 36 seconds. So, like, we are not, like, streaming has changed the game. You know, we're damn near back at ringtones.
Yeah, about the same left, yeah. I'm going through just peeking at my time. I have some that are over that, but most of them, yeah. And the ones where the songs are longer, the album is shorter.
Yeah, and like I said, this ain't a knock.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the machinations of the industry.
Right.
Honestly, I judge any artist that wasn't paying attention to this shit. Like, what, you gonna put out a album to flop? To for what? For me? For who? I would use the shit out of this algorithm. Like,
me?
I'm like, oh, so what we doing? 2 minute, 2.5 minute songs? That's what the fuck my whole album gonna be then. Cause mm-hmm. we need to make the money.
It's less work. Bitch, we can break that into 2 songs.
Right. A tri-state teen reels in possible record setting blue catfish.
That's blue, right. It's a blue catfish?
Mm-hmm. White people out here catching these catfish.
Is the color blue?
It's a catfish from the Ohio River. I don't know why it's called blue. It looked grayish blue. That's her there. I would play the article, but I think y'all won't be able to hear it, right? Or maybe I have to put in a different browser. Las Vegas. Yeah, because I think y'all can't hear it. So
okay.
Give me a second, everybody. I'll put it in a different browser. We'll watch it together.
Okay.
But yeah, she caught one of them cats. Them channel cats. The Ohio cats. All right, let me share my
when you call.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, mute this. Okay, cool. It's muted. All right, and now I'll go to share screen. I said go to share screen. Damn it. Oh, there we go.
okay, we get yeah. regular size. We're probably going to go back.
There we go. So I still got 15 seconds of this ad to play. No, but, oh, wait, I can skip it. All right, here we go. Volume.
Weighing blue catfish right out of the Ohio River.
Jalen Parker says she has been fishing with her father since she was young, but needed help to get this fish out of the water.
When you see the size of it, you it's will incredible. Know why yeah. she needed some help. Mike Shell has more.
Oh, I was screaming. I was so surprised. I didn't think he was going to be that big at all.
Jalen Parker didn't use a traditional rod and reel to pull in her catch. She used a technique called
good
jugging.
God.
All it takes is a Clorox jug, 200-pound test line, a hook, and some skipjack for bait.
We just take like a tree branch, like big.
This is some elite whiteness, because what the fuck is skipjack?
I was about to ask you, the fuck is the jugging? I'm so confused.
I thought they were going to say that other thing they do where they stick their hand down the mouth of the catfish.
Yes.
That's some elite white people shit, too.
Better than this, usually. And we just take it and we run it through the handle and then up by the tree, so it'd be like up here more, so that it can't go anywhere or float off unless a big fish comes and like breaks it or something.
The big fish did not break the line. It tipped the scale at 101.11 pounds.
Woo! Oh my God. That's almost enough to get fitted by Christian Siriano.
It was caught on Sunday with family friend Jeff Sams.
Now I start pulling him up and he just starts pulling me real hard. I was like, uh-oh. This is a big fish. I was like, get ready. I pull him up after I get him all entangled, and I pulled him up, and he rolled over on his side, and he was just massive.
With her dad Chuck in the background and Jeff holding the fish, Jalen said there was no way she could have pulled him in by herself.
I know them people. I know they so proud of her.
Yes, Chuck, keeping the tradition alive.
What an adorable family.
I mean, I'm probably 10 pounds bigger than him. I mean, there was no way I could get him in the boat by myself.
It's just amazing to all the guys that helped us release it. There was, I don't know, like 15 guys down there because we made sure this fish was not harmed. He was babied.
Mom,
now that's how you know it's white people news.
Yes, because they'd be like, Chad, I'm about 200 of my friends and we getting ready to eat Skipper.
The amount of motherfucking mustard and white bread.
All the slaw would have been sold out. All the baked beans would have been gone. They wouldn't have had no white bread.
They would have been like, man also captured 100-pound bottle of Texas Pete and brought it down. What? Let it go.
They'd be like, nigga, you need some bread?
Right. Everything on this side of the water belonged to me, player. Like,
Just narrated the release on her cell phone.
He is still very alive.
Jalen's dad, Chuck, and friend Jeff had the honor.
There he goes.
Good job.
101. Ohio State record released back into the river.
Oh, man.
Did you name it?
Oh, did he go swimming in it?
Yes, he did.
Man, come on, buddy. Oh, that's elite whiteness.
I named him Bobby.
Bobby?
Bobby the blue cat.
And with a little coaxing from her mom.
Jump in, Jay! Come on, you got it.
Jalen decided to take a celebratory plunge into the Ohio River.
Dog, this is river water. This not clean.
Yeah, it's river water, my nigga.
What y'all doing?
You got to get in.
I'm good.
Look out. State record.
It was freezing. It was so cold. And I had just let him go. So I was like, I know he's around there somewhere. I'm getting out of here. I was scared.
How old is that fish to get that huge?
I mean, eating littler fish and a lot of good luck. White people putting them back in the water and letting them give another go.
You know what? I bet you that nigga been snapping a lot of people's lines. He hit them and they be like,
ain't no fish that big in Charlotte. Tell you right now, too many black people around here.
Chad, they had the jugging to get him. You regular line, you wouldn't have survived.
It looked like a gigantic slug.
I know.
All right.
Didn't look like a fish.
Jalen. Nice job. Still waiting for official confirmation from the state of Ohio to see if, in fact, that fish she caught is a record catch. She says she can't wait to get back on the water, look for more, adding, quote, I hope to catch a bigger one soon. If you catch a...
Nah, girl, you done peaked. Okay, only way you catch a bigger one is if he come back after you let him go and he done put on some more weight.
Yeah. She gonna have to jug him again then, apparently.
Right. And last story for white people news and the feel good. Shit, there's so many good stories. God damn, y'all.
I like this good news.
It's hard to stop. You know what? Oh, two stories. The first one is the Golden Bachelor is already filed for divorce.
Oh, that's right.
72 years old, 70 years old. They
just got married.
They were married
for
3 months.
I'm about to say this shit, the show just ended.
What's crazy is if you get divorced at 72, you really hate that motherfucker. Because you like forever is a long time.
It sure is when you're 72. Yes, it is.
Like, you ain't got that long. You said, we can't even make it work, sis. Nope. Mm-mm. You got to go. I don't like you anymore. It's been 3 months, and I can tell. So yeah, he got divorced, or they're getting divorced. Mm-hmm. And then the last story, and it's a very positive, nice story. Eminem, mm-hmm. the rapper.
Oh yes.
You know him, Marshall Mathers?
Yes.
Celebrated 16 years of sobriety.
Wow, it's been that long?
Yep, it was on 420, ironically, April 20th. He shared an image of his latest sobriety chip on social media, marking over a decade and a half since overcoming struggles with addiction. Dope, because he really was on some, like, I don't know if he's going to be here.
I didn't know if he was going to make it.
Like, he was saying some, like, he was, them drugs had him.
Yes, they did.
And I always felt conflicted because when the drugs was on him was when I was peak
when he was
a fan.
Rapping his ass off, yes,
I
sir.
Said, God damn, this boy good. And then, you know, obviously I don't want the motherfucker to, you know, I'm not rooting for the drugs to win, you know.
So no.
it was what it was. I had mm-hmm. to let it go. But I'm proud of him, glad for mm-hmm. him. All right, we're gonna wrap it up and get up out of here. We'll do one last thing, which is of course sore ratchetness. All right, sword willing suspect arrested in Blue River. Is that where they caught that catfish?
Shit may have been.
You, Carlos Murrieta. Well, in a developing story, a man accused of swinging a sword is in jail today after days on the run. Officers found him in a porta potty where they were able to arrest him, all caught on camera. Joey Vaca shares details about the stinky situation.
Andrew Dimmick is in jail today.
They got jokes.
Not the stinky situation.
He had a sword, but he wasn't cutting the cheese.
Tonight, facing a number of charges, but the effort to get him there spanned days and took help from several law enforcement agencies. On Saturday, the Lane County Sheriff's Office began looking for Dimmick after reports came in that he was allegedly swinging a katana around people at the Terwilliger Hot Springs while inhaling nitrous oxide. A Lane County...
Oh!
What in the squidbillies?
actress Ox. Oh, what is it? Oxide?
Yeah.
Oh.
The same thing they use in Fast and Furious. That Knox.
What, did it turn you green? Did it, was a green smoke?
What the fuck? This man was out there.
He out there with Earl in them.
Right. Earl and Kylo, baby. Woo.
Deputy.
How about them dogs?
Him, his son.
Nitrous oxide. A Lane County deputy and Oregon State trooper spotted him later Saturday and tried to perform a traffic stop, but he got away. They searched Saturday and Sunday, but Monday morning they were tipped off Dimmick had been spotted going into a porta potty at the Blue Sky Market in Blue River, where he was finally arrested. So
he sounds like a dude that they're familiar with.
Yeah, there's like, we know his normal spots. Shit.
Right, right.
He ain't at his mama house, his grandma house. He checked his brother's house. Where the fuck could he be?
He ain't down at the Piggly Wiggly.
You know he was somebody checked the Piggly Wiggly.
Sergeant Tim Wallace with the Lane County Sheriff's Office says finding and arresting Dimmick was a team effort.
All the agencies that assisted us and that were up there, of course, the Sheriff's Office, the Oregon State Police, Eugene Police canines, and then a Springfield Police canine.
Wallace says the location of the search added to the challenge.
It's very steep terrain. It's very rugged terrain. And that certainly was a factor in this, both the effort put into it and also the length of time that it took to get him into custody.
The small communities along Highway 126 are able to rest a little easier tonight, knowing there isn't a sword-wielding suspect on the loose.
Top news for them.
Good for them. Glad they got that scoop.
Me too.
All right, y'all. That's it for today. Don't forget to check us out on Friday, Foolishness Friday,
yes!
On Urban View, on Sirius Satellite Radio, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. All right, y'all. Talk to y'all later. Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.